Welcome to Reclaiming the Republic. This show is sponsored by Mobius Strip Press. I am G.R. Mobley. If you go to my site, reclaimingtherepublic.org, you will have access to my content and support documents and links. This is an educational grassroots program leading in restoring the Republic and placing the federal government back into the scope and framework of the Constitution once again.
And welcome back. We have a few interviews that are canned and ready to go when we are done. We will also tell you that we're going to be doing marketing. So if you look at the podcast page, the Red State Talk Radio page on reclaimingtherepublic.org website, that's where you can find when we're going to probably do some things. But I will tell you that there is a lot of ratification debates that we need to get through. Anybody that is alarmed about your Second Amendment rights being taken away from you, you have to understand the context of the militia. You have to understand that there was an inseparable, it was joined within the Constitution, one's right not just to bear arms, but one's responsibility to bear arms to defend the Constitution. The framers were very aware of the machinations of men, avarice, and these things, the dark side of mankind. And what they gave us was a Constitution that created a foundation of government that kept the ability for bad politicians to come along. All we had to do as states is to make sure that the federal government stayed within the delegated powers. And at the state level, we were supposed to make sure that the states' governments stayed within their delegated powers, because the states are constitutional republics as well. I am an advocate that believes that the counties should have some form of delegated powers, just like the state should have some level of delegated powers. And as a matter of fact, I believe that your county constitution should have more enumerated powers in it than your state, and your state should have more enumerated powers than your federal government. You have to kind of differentiate between, you know, can a county really take care of itself, can every county within a state take care of its own needs, you know, public education and or those types of things, or should there even be public education? These are the questions that the governed should be deciding within their constitution. Our constitutions are so, I don't want to use the word stagnant, they are no longer within the framework of their original intent, because your state legislatures, direct initiatives, and so forth, people have injected things that have given the federal, not the federal, but the state governments far more power and taken away your power of your county. There has been a consolidation at the state level, and now the states are basically the whipping boys, and they have sold themselves out to the federal level, which means that they're consolidating all power to the federal level, which actually means that the next time we have a crisis, a catalyst that requires the setting aside of the Constitution, what we will witness is that your state legislatures are going to have to make a decision whether they allow the federal government to set aside the Constitution or not. I had a very pointed conversation regarding this past week. The state legislatures need to be educated about their authority over that Constitution. It's one thing that we get Republic Review going, but at a minimum, every state legislative body needs to understand that that is their constitution, that they hold the power over it. If it ain't in there, then the federal government has no power to do that. And one of the things that the federal government does not have any power to do is the ability to say, we've got a national emergency, we have to set aside the Constitution. No. The only way the Constitution can be set aside is through the deployment of the militia. The deployment of the militia can only be done when one of three things are required. One, that the constitutional law is to be enforced and the militias to do that. Second, to suppress insurrections. And third, to repel invasions. And I'm telling you, Congress is not going to do that, nor are they going to amend the Constitution, because they have gone so far beyond that they're willing to take the risk now that we're shining the light on their devious modes and devious actions. And so the problem is that who is actually shining the light that Congress is doing all of these bad things? Well, it's yours truly. I mean, there may be other hosts that kind of point to, but not one of them is stating that we can fix this. That's why you are listening to the only show that provides the academic evidence to give you academic-based solutions. This is the only show on air that provides the solution known as Republic Review. Now, the show is also sponsored by republicreview.org as well as reclaimingtherepublic.org. Like I said, you'll need to go to the podcast page on reclaimingtherepublic.org so that you can find out what the heck is coming up. But we still got a ways to go. I decided, let me go and take a cursory count. I don't have an official count, but there's a cursory count. There's a lot of long dissertations. There's long assertions that need to be read regarding the militia, because I think people are starting to realize that because the militia has been marginalized, it has not been removed from the Constitution, friends. The states have been duped into believing that this thing called the National Guard replaces their militia. Show me that in the Constitution. Show me that the states, the National Guard, has taken the full role and responsibility of the militia, because the militia goes down to the county level. There's no county level within the National Guard, nor is there any county control and or state control, really, over the National Guard. So, what we're going to do is we're going to dive into George Mason's comments first, and he actually mentions martial law, and then we'll go on and on. We got Mason, Madison, Henry, Corbin, Grayson. So I'm actually going to read, and for the sake of brevity, I might skip over the Henry parts and the Corbin part, not Corbin, but Henry, Grayson, some of these anti-federalists. I want to keep Mason in the queue or in the line, because Mason is actually a pretty honest man that isn't just making some wild assertions. He makes some really good points. Now, I'm not that Henry doesn't, but Henry was so ardently against the Constitution for a completely different reason. His comments lacked genuine base. They were more of a design for him to not have to relinquish the powers of the state. Mason actually wanted to see the Constitution get ratified. He thought that the Constitution was far better than anything else that we had. Now, Henry didn't. Henry wanted to just actually have another convention and try doing this all over again with him having better control. Because Henry had to have admitted deep down, he would probably never publicly admit that the Constitution was sufficient. What he wanted was to maintain the old confederation, where the states had the ability to say no to anything and everything. Now, when it comes down to military and fighting and national security, that is best to have that at the consolidated level. But that's all the federal government is supposed to be doing, is maintaining national security, not necessarily getting involved in regime manipulation and foreign affairs and manipulation of countries and going and fighting wars for purposes other than those things that are in the interest of individual liberty, individual sovereignty, and our national interests. Now, some people would argue that some of these things are in our national interest, and maybe they are, but whether we go to war in Afghanistan or whether we go to war in Syria or anywhere else, needs to be openly and honestly debated. And I truly believe that there has to be an exit strategy. In other words, we have to have a certain outcome and a proven path to that outcome. And in doing that, I think we actually can save lives and we can actually make sure that everybody understands why we're involved in this particular conflict or that particular conflict. Well, we're already coming up on a minute, so the one other thing I wanted to mention is we do have a sponsor. Go to reclaimingtherepublic.org where you can find Red State Coffee. Click on the link. It'll take you to the eBay page where you can buy that. And the reason why, one of the things I understand about this company is that because they live in a state that's kind of onerous over corporate taxes, and they just, you know, they're not making that kind of money where they want to be able to have a storefront. So they're using eBay because eBay will actually pay the sales tax to the state where that purchase is being done. And this is the same thing with Amazon. And so that's one of the reasons why they use eBay as their storefront, because they don't want to have to create a physical storefront. So anyway, and as a matter of fact, I believe they operate out of Idaho, registered in Washington. Anyway, it's kind of an interesting setup, but these are the things that, you know, become a driving factor in business if you're not at that level where you're making that kind of money to where you can, you know, you have to create a storefront, where you have to create, you know, that frontage for the state. And so the taxations and everything else can really kick in. Not that the taxes are that bad, but bottom line, when you're only making marginal money, you know, every penny counts. So anyway, we will be back. Go get your Red State Coffee, and we'll be right back after these two promos. Thank you so much. Have you taken the time to watch our presentation on YouTube that provided an irrefutable argument of what we have to do to save our Constitution and our Republic? I know it's over an hour and 30 minutes, but you only need to watch the first 30 minutes. If you take the time to watch this presentation, I promise it will change your paradigm regarding what our Constitution is and what we have to do if we are going to save it, our liberties, our sovereignty, and our Republic. We already have answers to most of the questions that you might think of after watching this presentation, and we want to help you get to a point where you have a profound understanding of the audit and republic review process. This is why our bullet overview and flowchart of both the argument and process is available on reclaimingtherepublic.org. The sooner you get informed, the sooner you can get involved and make an impact. So go to reclaimingtherepublic.org to the Take Action page. That's where you'll find the video. Thank you so much. If you've listened to my show, Reclaiming the Republic, then you should understand that the Constitution is neither a living document nor a noble guide to governance. In accordance to Article 7, the Constitution is a hard, fast contract, and the states are the only stakeholders in this contract. Integral in contract law, the stakeholders or states possess the inherent authority to exercise oversight and enforcement over their contract. This means they can audit the federal government by the contract, and with republic review, they can enforce compliance to their constitution. Any single state can perform the audit, but when states begin to unite in the auditing process, this is what is referred to as republic review. Please read my argument for republic review as well as my description of the Republic Review model on reclaimingtherepublic.org. We even have a graphic flowchart that shows you how Republic Review works. If you want to learn more, contact me on Facebook or send me an email. Thank you.
Okay, so the number to dial in is 215-TOP-TALK or 215-867-8255. Do not forget my three C's when you dial in. And let's get on with the dialogue.
Okay, so let me editorialize with Mason, because some of the points he brings up are not founded. In other words, he has this paradigm of, you know, doom and gloom. And I'll editorialize and help clarify this. So he starts off with this. The objection was, too much power was given to Congress, power that would finally destroy the state governments more effectually by insidious, underhanded means than such as could be openly practiced. This, said he, is the opinion of many worthy men, not only in this convention, but in all parts of America. These laws could only show that the state, or that the legislator of this state, the legislature of this state, passed such acts. He thought they militated against the cession of this power to Congress, because the state governments could call forth the militia when necessary so as to compel a submission to the laws. And as they were competent to it, Congress ought not to have that power. The meaning, so basically what he's saying is that the states should have the power to enforce the federal law that they determine what, you know, in other words, it would be up to the states to call forth the militia instead of Congress. The problem is that the state's job wasn't to necessarily have the stop or blockage on the militia. They were supposed to keep Congress in check to say, hold it, that power is not within the enumerated powers. Fortunately, we were blessed with three presidents like Madison, Monroe, and Jackson when it came to the usurpation of state powers in trying to create a Department of Transportation. Those presidents recognized that this was a power grab of the states. The states were the ones who were completely clueless. They weren't necessarily clueless. They were being duped, because instead of referencing how these things were described and how these were the terms of the contract were defined in the ratification debates, when all of a sudden people no longer had the fresh debates in their minds, things started becoming obscured, and there was a deliberate act of obscuring the true definitions and terms of the contract, which were within the ratification debates, and they started making it up as they go along, you know, just like a bunch of kids. And eventually, you know, everybody's kind of, I don't want to say they sold out, but they started believing in the faith. And to be clear, John Marshall did not create a communist government, but he created the footings that allowed the country to start shifting and expanding in a direction that would actually create or invite unconstitutional movements and changes within the federal government to create socialism. And the states should have stepped in every time that those footings started, because Marshall's opinions were just opinions. And then what happened was, all of a sudden, the federal government crept in case law and precedents and said, hey, well, we have in all these different decisions, we've kind of had similar decisions. Instead of referring to the ratification debates, they referenced what was said by the almighty men in black robes. That's why the one book I love of Mark Levin's is Men in Black. I think he really points this, you know, this weakness, this problem with the system itself, was that the Supreme Court was fallible. They were able to, you know, become agenda managers and became activists by the bench. So I think the important thing is to understand that what Mason was painting in this picture of this gloom and doom, the only thing that he wasn't understanding was that the state still had the authority to once stop and or recover and restore. The state still possessed the power, because even though the federal government has done all of these violations, the states still possess the authority over the Constitution. Why didn't he understand that? Because the understanding of contract law was not as mature back then. He wasn't putting this into context of a contract, which is exactly what the Lord did. Even though Madison and Jefferson and a few other framers referred to the Constitution as a compact, they never said, hey, this whole thing, this Constitution and the federal government is subject to contract law. The court over that contract is not the Supreme Court. The court over that contract is the collective states. As everybody will tell you, any state can come along and nullify anything that's unconstitutional, but that does not give that one state the power and authority to go in and disrupt, remove, decommission, and dismantle unconstitutional things they've nullified. The only way that happens is with republic review. When you get the states collectively, when you have 27, when you have a majority of states that control both houses of Congress, now you have the political force necessary to force Congress to either submit to the will of the masters of that Constitution, the principals, the stakeholders, or they will be removed and charged with treason. And, oh, by the way, this whole thing then can start in, and it'll end up cleaning up these blue states as I'm starting to part these curtains, these veils of the grand jury. I am starting to recognize that the grand jury is a tool, is a mechanism to help blue states remove the corruption and the usurpations of liberties and rights that are all unconstitutional. The grand jury is the local equalizer to clean up the state governments. You want to stop having people, communists, declaring, because we're friends, when people start waking up of this mechanism and the power of republic review and the control over this Constitution and how these powers work together, people will start, the epiphany is going to start spreading, that people will recognize that we are in a position of removing permanently Bernie Sanders, Barack Obama's, and anybody that wants to claim the constitutional powers of communism exist within this Constitution, because they do not. Oh, well, these court rulings. No, the court rulings, nowhere in the Constitution do court rulings have any standing. A court ruling only decides one issue, one case. It does not create constitutional law. The only thing that creates constitutional law are laws that are tied to the enumerated powers written by Congress. And so if it's not tied to the enumerated powers, as we have read many times already, and we're going to read more, we're going to find that the federal government is limited to only the enumerated powers. They can't administer housing. They can't administer and mandate and regulate labor. They can't regulate products. They can't regulate emission controls unless we amend the Constitution. And folks, be very aware that amending the Constitution, giving the federal government power over domestic matters, is a destructive thing to do. You have to be guarded with the people that you empower with guns to make sure that those guns are being used as prescribed, because they're using those guns in our school system. They're using those guns with social engineering, because they have created an unconstitutional enforcement force that I like to call a standing army. Anyway, I'm sorry for the rant and digressing. Mason goes back, and going back to Mason, he says he thought they were not confined to the technical explanation, but that Congress could inflict severe and ignominious punishments on the militia as a necessary incident to the power of organizing and disciplining them. The gentleman had said that there was no danger because the laws respecting the militia were less rigid in the other states than this. This was no conclusive argument. His fears, he has had before expressed, were the grievous punishments would be inflicted in order to render service disagreeable to the militia themselves and induce them to wish its abolition, which would afford a pretense for establishing an army. So he's going back to his accurate argument, but the inaccuracy was that he's talking about they were going to use these punishments to, you know, to actually subdue and take the take the backbone out of the militia, to remove their ability to stand up for the states. But that never happened. What they did was they just stopped funding them. They just ignored them and eventually didn't even acknowledge the militia. And when it came down to the Civil War, there was still this little hint that there's this militia. And it was quickly determined by Lincoln unconstitutionally in Congress to create a standing army to inflict their war of unconstitutional war. The only thing that made the Civil War, as far as I am concerned, constitutional was the Monroe Doctrine when the Southern states seceded. Okay, now follow me on this. When the Southern states seceded, they were no longer a part of the Union. They were a foreign state. And as a foreign state, the Northern states could have abolished, which they did. They basically abolished, but they could have actually called out an outright war against slavery instead of a mercantile war of control of economics, taxes, and so forth. We'll be right back after these two messages. Thank you so much. Reclaiming the Republic is more than an educational radio show. My intent is to also work with you and local leadership to promote matters of the Constitution and self-governance. This way we can all promote constitutional awareness within our communities and with our elected officials and public leaders. If you love liberty and sovereignty and recognize the federal tyranny that is threatening our lives, then we are asking for your help. And here are a few ways you can help. Spread the word about this radio show, Reclaiming the Republic. It is the only radio show in the world asserting a constitutional solution to federal overreach. Download and share our podcasts and content. Read, like, follow, and share our Mobiusstrip Press and Reclaiming the Republic pages on Facebook. Follow us on Twitter at Mobiusstrip News. Get informed about local groups in the area and get involved. Most importantly, become a constitutional warrior with your local leaders and demand that they begin applying constitutional tests to what they are doing and who they are supporting. Thank you. To become a citizen, one must take an oath to support and defend the Constitution. Those of us who are naturally born citizens are obligated and duty-bound to fulfill the same oath, even though we're not required to take it, because it is implied upon us at birth. This is why I cannot emphasize enough the importance in supporting businesses who are supporting our Constitution. We have to stop supporting businesses that have chosen to hide behind political correctness, and obviously we must stop supporting progressive businesses who are working to undermine our republic and our Constitution. Do not let businesses or organizations convince you that they are supporting the Constitution by supporting protests for social justice. By definition, social justice is the distribution of wealth, opportunities, and privileges within a society. In other words, they're calling for socialism, which is incompatible with individual liberty and individual sovereignty and our Constitution. With that, please consider supporting businesses who advertise on this show and this radio station.
That number to dial in is 215-TOP-TALK, 215-867-8255. And again, don't forget those three C's. And if you're ready to call in, the lines are open.
Okay, so at this point, towards the very end of Mason's diatribe, he really gets very animated. And so the scribes kind of capture what he's doing. So the way this is read, it's not Mason talking anymore. This is literally, these guys are writing his actions, his emotions, and you know what he's demanding and so forth. And he says this, or this is how it was written. He was convinced, they're talking he being Mason. Mason was convinced the state governments ought to have the control of the militia, except when they were an absolute necessary for general purposes. The gentleman, which was Madison, said that they would only be subject to martial law when in actual service. So he's just repeating what Madison had said. And then he says, then they note that Mason demanded what was to hinder Congress from inflicting it always and making a general law for the purpose. Now, so fact of the matter is that the militia can only be called up for three things. for executing the laws of the union. And what kind of laws could they write? Could they write laws about labor? No. Could they write laws about commerce? No. They only had the control of making sure that states weren't pitting economic warfare against other states. And they had failed to do that when the northern states started passing taxes against the southern states. Now, the reason this whole thing was boiling up was because of this division of slavery. One of the things that helped push this further along was the Missouri Compromise. Monroe made a huge constitutional blunder in allowing and injecting a Missouri Compromise because it was not an enumerated power for the federal government to determine the destiny of a state or the foundation of a state. The federal government had no authority to say your state had to be a slave state. Case in point, the Missouri Compromise, there weren't people in Missouri that wanted to be a slave state. They were forced to be a slave state. If you didn't know this, and if you didn't understand, there is a reason why the Dred Scott case, and this was a historic case, my friends, the Dred Scott case in Missouri. Dred Scott was found, he was a slave, and he had reached a mulatto, and he'd reached his point where his original master who owned him died. And I don't know if he was in Minnesota or where he was at the time, but he ended up getting, he was back in Missouri. That's where the court had tried him, and he was tried by 12 jurors and freed by 12 jurors. In other words, he was a free man. The activism of the Supreme Court reached down into a matter that was should have been resolved completely at the state level, and they took activism because the Supreme Court can't just reach down and take a case. You have to pursue that case to the Supreme Court if it is within their jurisdiction. Now, slavery was not within their jurisdiction. This was strictly a state issue. It was strictly a state issue. The states weren't empowered. What created this unconstitutional jurisdiction was the Missouri Compromise. And so what ended up happening was Taney, Supreme Court Justice Taney, was the man that convicted Dred Scott to serve in slavery the rest of his life. And I believe he ended up escaping and living the rest of his life in Minnesota as a man on the lam or what have you. But he went to the North because the North started nullifying these slave laws. They started realizing that the perversion and the subversion of the United States government, not the Constitution, but the government, started and went in bed with slavery and allowing this division between the North and the South. And Monroe was... I don't know until I die and I'm talking face to face with the man. I do not understand why those decisions were made where he thought that the federal government would be better to, you know, bypass the Article 5 process and grant them the power of dictating whether a state would enter the union as a slave state or a free state, and creating this arbitrary geographic line across the United States called the Mason-County-Dixon line, the Mason-Dixon line. And so, how, why? These are questions I have for this man. Anyway, got a lot of questions for some of our framers. Why did you do this? Why this? Because, you know, inquiring minds want to know, right? Anyway, Madison states his response back to Mason and says, "The obvious explanation was that the states were to appoint the officers and govern all the militia except that part which was called into the actual service of the United States for those three very specific reasons." He asked if power were given to the general government, if we must not give it executive power to use it. The vice of the old system was that the Congress could not execute the powers nominally vested in them. If the contested clause was expunged, this system would have nearly the same defect, exactly the same problem. And Madison was right. The problem was, and what Mason didn't see and didn't include, or he would have been totally visionary, was that as this system progressed, that the federal government would convince using, you know, their authority, because what Mason should have said, and I think going back to this clear vision, if Mason would have understood that the entire ratification debates would have been obscured, that people would not have had their hands on the terms and definitions of this contract and understanding it in the context of a contract, then I think Mason would have said, well, we really have no problem. We just have to make sure that our state legislators are vigilant and understand these ratification debates. This is why one of the biggest flaws of what they did in moving forward is that they didn't compile these ratification debates so that every state, when they came into the union, they would have these documents like scriptures that would explain those commandments written on parchment that created the federal government. The ratification debates are the clarifiers of everything. This way we could actually have real dialogue with the Supreme Court when they started, you know, like Blackmun in Roe v. Wade, emanations from penumbras exist within. No, where is that? That didn't exist at all. And these men in black robes with their activist visions have driven us towards this communist nature. Here's the question. Is Trump really giving this? Because I'm not seeing good robes going into the Supreme Court. They may have some conservative credentials, but they don't have any constitutional credentials. And I'm telling you, Scalia, I think, rubbed off on Clarence Thomas, or Clarence Thomas had, you know, the foundation of constitutionalism and has become an originalist and one of the few on the court. And that's terrible. Every single Supreme Court justice needs to be very aware of these ratification debates, of how this Constitution was termed and defined and so forth and sold to the states. That's how important this stuff is. That's why the ratification debates is this nation's greatest treasure. And it is the treasure that we are to use in moving forward in reclaiming this republic. Mr. Henry then jumps up after Madison and states this: what authority the state governments had over the militia? What authority did they have? And then Madison's response was the state governments might do what they thought proper with the militia when they were not in actual service of the United States. They might make use of them to suppress insurrections, quell riots, and call on the general government for the militia of any other state to aid them if necessary. If things got so pandemonious that they could start calling upon the other states' militias like California, New Mexico, Arizona, and Texas with the border, and having this literally an invasion occurring over the past few decades. So Mr. Henry then replies back and says, as the cause expressly vested the general government with the power to call them out to suppress insurrections or invasions, it appeared to him most decidedly that the power of suppressing insurrections was exclusively given to Congress. If it remained in the states, it was an implication. Now, I don't want to split words, and Henry was a pretty smart fella and loved splitting words. But the fact of the matter is, and he's using insurrection, what they should have used was invasion, because invasion is in context to what we're experiencing today. And Madison should have then said, had he used the word invasion, if there was this invasion going on, then Madison would have said, oh, well, then the states would then, you know, the general government would call, because why would the general government have to do this? Because regarding invasions, there is this guarantee clause in Article 4 of the Constitution that the United States guarantees that all states be republican in form and protect them from invasion. The federal government has no excuse why we are dealing with an invasion on our southern border. Every person that has not voted to stop that invasion has violated their oath of office. That's why all of Congress, as far as I'm concerned, is subject to being removed and even presidents being impeached because they've failed to do their job. We are at a break, though, as you can tell, and I'll, you know, calm myself down a little bit, and we'll be right back after these two promos. Thank you so much.
Folks, Red State Talk Radio has brought back its monthly newsletter. I know everyone gets a lot of emails, but this is not a daily or weekly newsletter. It's a monthly newsletter. So you will not be overwhelmed with a plethora of emails from Red State Talk Radio. Come on, it's only once a month. I'll be contributing a constitutional perspective to one of the current issues to help everyone see an alternative perspective, or what I believe would be a framer's perspective regarding the issue to help us maintain a constitutional paradigm. I will also provide information regarding a significant historical context to the time of year so that we can remember our history, so we will not be doomed to repeat the inevitable failings from forgetting our past and origins. Just go to Red State Talk Radio and sign up for the newsletter. This way you can get a focused view of what is going on in the Republic as well as what is going on at Red State Talk Radio. Thank you.
To set the record straight, Republic Review is neither an Article 5 convention nor a convention of states. In accordance with Article 5 of the Constitution, this convention requires 2/3 of the states to apply to Congress to convene a convention with the intent to amend the Constitution. This convention is unable to solve our real problem, which is non-compliance to the Constitution, and would be dangerous to convene at this time. In contrast, Republic Review is the process of the states exerting its constitutional authority over the Constitution. An audit does not require an application to Congress. This authority is inherent to principal stakeholders of a contract. Why do we need Republic Review? Because this is the only way the states can deal with the federal encroachments into roles, responsibilities, and powers that belong to the states. To learn more about Republic Review, please go to reclaimingtherepublic.org to read my content and my model on the audit and Republic Review process.
Okay, if you want to join in on the dialogue, you need to call 215-TOP-TALK. That's 215-867-8255.
And, you know, sometimes I forget what's in these ratification debates. So going through these just like this in this sequence is almost a validation, because Mr. Corbyn then gets up to respond to what Mr. Henry just said, that this, you know, because the power was vested in Congress, it was expressly given, because if it wasn't, then it would be an implied power of the states. However, Mr. Corbyn stands up and says, all contentions on this subject must be ended by adverting to the fourth section of the fourth article. Is that what I just said? Which provides that the United States shall guarantee to every state in the Union a republican form of government and shall protect them against invasion and on application of the legislature or the executive, when the legislature cannot be convened, against domestic violence. So I neglected to remember, because there's that little clause that breaks it. You know, when they're not convened, then they can go to the president. But it clearly states in Article 4, Section 4, that the militia is to protect us from invasions as well as insurrections. So I was just thinking that had they been talking about an invasion, but it actually includes both. And forgive me for not tying this together. But as I told you, though, Section 4 of Article 4 clearly points this out, that the United States is obligated to protecting the states from insurrections as well as from invasions. And that all ties back to Article 1, Section 8, Subsection 15. The Congress shall have the power to call forth the militia to execute the laws of the land, to suppress insurrections, and to repel invasions. Anyway, Mr. Corbyn goes on and says, he thought this section gave the states the power to use their own militia and call on Congress for the militia of other states. He observed that our representatives were to return every second year to mingle with their fellow citizens. He asked then how, in the name of God, they would make laws to destroy themselves. The gentleman had told us that nothing could be more humiliating than the state governments could not control the general government. He thought that the gentleman might as well have complained that one county could not control the state at large. Mr. Corbin then said that all Confederate governments had the care of the national defense and that Congress ought to have it. Animadverting, or, you know, expressing on Mr. Henry's observations that the French had been instruments of their own slavery, that the Germans had enslaved the Germans, and that the Spaniards, etc., etc., and on and on. He asked if those nations knew anything of representation. They want of this knowledge was the principal cause of their bondage. He concluded by observing that the general government had no power but such as the state government had, and that the arguments against the one held against the other. Interesting. But he does point to this fact that the federal government must guarantee, and that the states could call upon them to, you know, say, we need more militia help. California, Arizona, New Mexico, and Texas should be calling upon the federal government for the rest of the states to send militia down and occupy that southern border until the wall is made. But the problem is that we have communists who are rebelling against this Constitution, because that clause still stands. The guarantee clause is there. They are obligated to support that. And by refusing and ignoring it, they are committing fundamentally moral perjury, because they take an oath of office to do these things, to support this Constitution and obey the supreme law of the land. And then as soon as they put their arm down from the square and step into office, they go right out and literally violate that very oath that they just took. That's why the Moral Perjury Clause, Section 3 of the 14th Amendment, is very clear that when a public servant who has raised their arm to the square to take that oath and violates that oath by not doing what that Constitution requires and guarantees, then they are to be removed from office and banned for life. And so here, I'm going to tie this all together for you. We've been talking about the grand jury. The grand jury has the power to remove anybody within the state that is violating their oath of office. Now, there are these things of jurisdictions and so forth, but bottom line, if you are not executing and stopping this invasion on the southern border, and see, if Trump understood this, you know, this conversation would have been done with as soon as he stepped into office. Because if Trump would have understood this, he would have actually removed and replaced every member of Congress, every member within the federal government that had, you know, has to raise their arm to the square and is not supporting the Constitution and stopping this invasion. Then everybody has to do, you know, they are no longer eligible. They have been bottom line, I'm getting a little edgy here. Let me calm down. Bottom line, everybody who has to take an oath and violates that oath must be removed, because they no longer are qualified to serve as a public servant. You have to understand, Section 3 is not a criminal law. It is a qualification requirement. If you cannot support this Constitution and you support anything other than the Constitution, and you actually go against the Constitution by speaking open borders, by walking people across the border line, by dictating theocracies of Mohammedism and so forth, those people must be removed per the supreme law of the land. And if Trump understood this, I wouldn't have to be here. If the states understood this and we actually started just enforcing the Constitution, most of the federal government would just go away. And people would then have to have honest discussions. Do we really want to do that? Do we want to amend the Constitution? Now, any John Bircher that's listening, because I'm going to put it out there, there is one flaw within the Constitution that has tied the state's hands on this concept of not being able to enter into compacts. And it is in Section 9, Article 1, Section 9, I believe, no, it's 10. I think Section 9 is the restrictions on the federal government, and Section 10 is on the state. But it is in that restrictions portion of the Constitution where states aren't supposed to be able to create compacts with each other. Well, now that we have advanced to this point, to where we have the technology, we have the capabilities, and we have the need for maybe educational standards, then I think we need to amend the Constitution that states can create compacts, but it must require all states participate in that compact and that the same kind of principles apply. That, you know, if you're going to make changes to a delegated power, it's got to go back to, you know, in other words, creating kind of like the constitutional standings to any type of domestic polity that they create. Now, to case in point, the Department of Education, getting rid of that would be, you know, the greatest thing we can do. But the states would then need to actually change what the standards are. And this is where we have to have these conversations. But we have to make one minor change. The compact clause has to be stricken or has to be modified to inject this one concept that states can create compacts over domestic issues. And you can provide examples. And we can actually debate all of this. We'll keep track of everything that was said. It will all go into the transcripts so that 100, 200 years down, 500 years down the road, anybody that wants to understand why we made this one change, they will refer to the debates for the full clarity to understand it cannot be undermined. Because as we come up with all of these arguments and we state that this is for this and this only, then that's it. It's done. And that's what these ratification debates prove, that what was granted to the federal government was only these minute powers. Now, Mr. Grayson is going to step up, and he's basically going to challenge, and not that I consider him an idiot, but he doesn't provide what I would consider really good, lucid arguments, and sometimes it's just like he just doesn't get it. So I'm going to kind of miss that. So what we're going to do is I'm going to cover in the next episode, because I've got less than a minute left, we're going to cover John Marshall, and Marshall is going to talk about the exclusiveness of the general government, the power of legislating, giving them within the 10 miles of exclusive legislation within the seat of government. He's going to talk about this, and he's going to talk very specifically about what that means. And then right after that, Grayson wants to get back into, you know, here, Marshall has injected a new argument regarding the exclusivity of legislation and what that meant. And so, but then the next thing you know, Marshall wants to understand, or Grace wants to understand, how does this contain or refer to the militia? Anyway, we will be getting into that in our next episode. I'm G.R. Mobley. We're reclaiming the Republic, and we need your help. God bless.
Folks, I'm constantly providing you with case after case and giving you both the empirical information as well as irrefutable academic evidence that the federal government is operating well outside the bounds of the Constitution. In measuring outlays, the federal government is spending over 80% of your tax dollars on unconstitutional government. This is why we don't need a balanced budget amendment. We just need to enforce the Constitution. So what is it going to take for you to take a stand in getting the federal government back into the framework of the Constitution? To be clear, the solution is simple and does not require much work on any one individual, especially if everyone contributed to the effort. We only ask that you make a commitment today to contributing however you can and make the difference necessary for our posterity's sake. Send me an email at info@reclaimingtherepublic.org and let me know how you'd like to help so we can help you save our republic.